The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, September the 10th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with Jerry Stone as he reflects on his friendship with Jimmy Nace, as on Saturday, it's the 31st Annual National Open for the 410 Sprint Cars, the Jim Nace Memorial at Sewens Grove Speedway. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway, and by Rod and Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Hi, this is Luke Bowie driving the 55AU. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back, race fans, to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Coming up this Saturday at the Sewens Grove Speedway, it is the 31st running of the National Open and also the Jim Nace Memorial for the 410 Sprint Cars. Always a great race this year, a single feature of 44 laps. As we honor the memory of the only five-time sprint car track champion at the Speedway in Jim Nace. And on the line with us right now to talk about Jim racing here in central Pennsylvania and how he might differ on a few things with our good mutual friend Emmett Hahn, we welcome in the man who is originally from Wichita, Kansas, now living in Bixby, Oklahoma, Jerry Stone. Jerry, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So 1980, you moved from Wichita down to Tulsa for a big ride. Let's start there first and tell us about that ride and how critical that was in the early part of your racing career.
You're talking about Emmett Hahn. I drove his second car at Tulsa, and that's at the first race of the year in 1980. For the Zinc Company and Jack Zinc, and that ride or that showing there is what got me the ride in the Fixed Go car. They actually called me that week, and I moved down here that following week to drive the Fixed Go car.
And you've been in Oklahoma ever since then, outside of your time in Pennsylvania.
Yep. We're still Tulsa area. Bixby's just a suburb. We lived in Owosso for a while in Tulsa, and we stayed right in this area.
Now, I'm trying to figure out something. You mean to tell me that our good friend Emmett Hahn actually let you move into the state of Oklahoma being from Kansas? I mean, here's a guy that used to say he'd go to Kansas, I-81 Speedway, awesome racetrack. He'd win, take the money, take the girls, and get it back across the Oklahoma state line before they could get their hands on him.
Well, you know, some people just don't get it right. One of his old owners, which would have been Pat Suki, he drove for a little while. Used to say he was a fellow from Oklahoma City. Suki, he used to say that if you wanted a race, somebody drive your race car, you just go to Wichita and find you some old wino and put him in your race car, and he's better than anything else he can find down here. So,
we always like talking about our good friend Emmett Hahn. He's a great guy. And real quickly, you and I have an interesting story about getting pulled over by the cops. I got pulled over because of a speeding ticket. To which Emmett wanted to know whether or not I had I'm a Yankee sticker on the back of my car, because it was the second straight day that I had gotten pulled over for speeding. The first, well, really didn't count because I didn't see the flashing lights on the school zone deal, and I was doing 30 in a 30. But you have an interesting story to tell about getting pulled over one time on the way to the racetrack.
Yeah, it would have been in 1979. I was running sprint cars. We was running Knoxville quite often in Kansas City and up in Marshall, Missouri, in that area. And on the way to, I don't even know if we was going to Knoxville or Kansas City that week, we was going through Carthage, Missouri, which is over by Joplin. And a policeman turns his red lights on and pull me over. And I said, I know I'm speeding. I said, what'd I do? And he says, well, you didn't do anything. He said, but did you see this article that they had in the Kansas City Star about dirt track racing? They had a derogatory, somebody had written an article about, and I didn't even read the article, honestly, that was, you know, bad mouth and dirt track racing. And this policeman, which was 100 miles from his home, and he was upset about it. And he just wanted to talk to somebody about it.
Oh, that's pretty cute. I mean, you're sitting there thinking, what did we do wrong? And here's the cop wanting to talk about the story in the paper. Oh, that's great. We're talking with Jerry Stone, and Jerry became an adopted member of the Pennsylvania Posse when he moved here, and that would have been 1985, if memory serves me correct?
Yeah, correct.
What do you recall in the first time that you had a chance to either meet or watch your late friend Jim Nace race in and around Central Pennsylvania?
It would have been 85. In fact, I'm almost thinking that was one of the first races of the year, and in that area was Hagerstown. They run a race in the spring. And I believe he crashed that day, but he had one of the funniest crashes I have ever seen. That's where I even knew him. I didn't see what happened, but he kind of was spinning out, and he hit they had 55-gallon barrels full of water around the inside of the turns, and he hit this thing with his front end, and it spun him like a top until the car spun around. And it stood up on its tail, and when it stopped spinning, it was spinning on the rear bumper on its tail, and when it stopped spinning, it fell back against the wing and just laid there. I mean, it didn't even fall over. It was one of the crazy, I mean, it wasn't a bad crash. It was just one of the weirdest crashes I'd ever seen. So that was about, I think that was about the first time I really noticed him, because it was one of our first races. And nothing bad. It was just funny, because he was in a really good ride and he was fast and he was one of the guns, the big guns at that time.
You had raced with the Outlaws in their early days back in '79. You were telling me, and then of course you come here 6 years later to Central Pennsylvania. Back in that time, Jerry, what was there any talk or how did you folks out in the Midwest hear about the racing that we had here in Central Pennsylvania?
Well, honestly, what got me interested in coming back there to start with was in '79. I was in Phoenix at the Western World, which is towards the end of the year, the big race they have at Phoenix. And I had a really bad crash. And in the thing, I'd crashed hard, and then I was laying the racetrack, and one of your local Smoky Snellbaker come along and run into me after I'd stopped flipping, and they hauled us both to the hospital.
Oh, jeez!
In the same ambulance. Well, then we had a follow up visit at the doctor a couple days later. And got to talking to him at the doctor's office, and in fact, I got his phone number and stuff, and I called him and talked to him, and just talked about the racing back there, how much there was of it, and how good it was, and how many tracks there were, and I just really got the interest then, And it was just due to the ride I got with Ofixco was a super modified ride. And it was 85. It was just due to some things that happened around here, that opportunity come up to bring a car back there for Ofixco. And that's basically how I got there. So.
And unfortunately, as you are well aware, just a few weeks ago we lost Kramer Williamson, but you were telling me before we came on the air, Kramer was very helpful in getting you settled into Central Pennsylvania.
Yes, absolutely. I got to know Kramer in that same probably 79, 80 along in there, and in fact, the Ofixco people had a Silver Crown car, and I had to stay home run super modifieds. I couldn't go run it, and they needed a driver one time, and I talked them into putting Kramer in it because Schumann normally drove it. Sammy Swimdale had driven it some, and Schumann drove it normally, and they needed – Schumann couldn't be somewhere. I think it was at Nazareth. And so Kramer got to drive the car, and he got a kick out of that. And then when it come time for me to move out there, well, he showed me around all over. He run me all over and introduced me to everybody and helped me find a rent house and, you know, a shop. And basically he went racing with me. He didn't have a ride at the time, so he went with me for a few races just to kind of help me get my feet on the ground. He was a really good guy and a good friend.
And that's typical Kramer, just helping everybody out.
Yeah, always had a smile on his face, you know, and just like Nace, they were good-natured people and a lot of fun.
That's very true. I want to go back. You mentioned about Smokey Snellbaker and talking with him and hearing about the folks in Pennsylvania and then getting to meet, you know, the folks like Jim Nace, like Kramer. When you first arrived here on the scene after, you know, hearing about this place and seeing the racing out here, is there any way to compare what the racing was like back then in the Midwest with the sprint cars and even the super modified, because super modifieds were running around here before they gave way to the sprint cars. Any way, Jerry, to compare the type of racing, whether the drivers were more aggressive here or was it just a bunch of great guys in an incredible era that were so talented that they could take a car before we have places that manufacture equipment these days and make things happen to it that you wouldn't think about? What was it like to race back then with those guys?
Well, the difference between there and here is, you know, if you wanted to run three nights a week, you had to drive. If you'd lived in Tulsa, you'd drive 130 or 40 miles to Oklahoma City to run Friday night. You'd have to drive about 200 to Wichita to run Sunday night. And up there, you know, you had so many cars and so many tracks. Run three nights a week within about 85 miles of my house when I lived there. And that's just something you don't have here. And I think because of that, part of that is that's why there was so many cars and so many good cars. And it was so competitive. Not that it wasn't competitive racing here, but it wasn't near like it was there because there was so many good cars and so many people that did it 100 times a year. You know, most guys back here, a lot of guys run one track. They might run two tracks, you know, I would run maybe 35, 40 races back here in a year. When you go out there, you can run all you want, 85, 100 races, and you just get so much more experience, and it was so competitive that it made everybody better. The better people you run against, the better you are. And I was lucky in Wichita. We had good racers up there, and they was good teachers. I mean, they could go anywhere in the country and be competitive, but there still wasn't as much racing. And then when I moved out there, I figured out what I didn't know, and I didn't have enough knowledge chassis-wise, and I needed to, you know, there's a lot of things I needed to learn, and it was quite a learning experience for me just being there. And when I came back, I was a whole lot better than when I left, and when I moved back here, I could see the difference. You know, it's just who you race against is it makes you better if you're riding against better guys.
And your first impressions, when you first got here and started running on a regular basis, what were your very first impressions of the racing and the fans and the types of tracks that we have here in central Pennsylvania?
Well, it was just unreal. I mean, I wasn't used to seeing that many cars that were pretty competitive with each other back here. You know, some guys had better equipment than others, and in fact, that was part of the problem when I run Ofixco car here. There was about three or four cars that was first class. I mean, as good as I had. So if I had a bad night, I run second or third. So that doesn't make you really get better. You know, I mean, we run, you know, you just kind of, and when you get with guys where you got, I won one race at the Grove, and I was, the 21st different winner that year. Well, you didn't have that back here. So, yeah, when I saw the amount of racing, the cars, the competition, and the guys, I mean, it was eye-opening, you know. I realized that I had a lot more to learn than I thought I did. So it was a good experience, though.
And how about your races against Jimmy Nace and then your eventual friendship with him? How did that all come about?
Well, you know, he lived so far away. I'm not going to say we were buddies when I was there. I talked to him, and I liked him. He was always funny to talk to and fun to talk to. But, you know, I'd drive away, and when we're racing, when you're running 85 or 100 races a year, you're not really doing a lot of visiting. You're busy. I mean, it's a full-time job, So I saw him at the races and talked to him and liked him. I honestly got to know him better about 8 years ago. It was I wasn't racing myself. I'd had a fire and burn up all my stuff, and I decided to quit racing. And I flew out in the fall to visit our boy. Our boy still is Manheim. And I went to a race at Susquehanna, and that's when Jim was, the cancer was getting serious, and if I remember right, I think he was going to run the Grove that week and then quit racing to take this cancer thing on 100% like he did. He fought it really hard and had a good attitude. I talked to him that night at the racetrack more than I'd ever talked to him. And then just talked to him on the phone. We really got to be friends then. He's the one that got me. I hadn't went to Knoxville for the Nationals to even watch for, probably 10, 12 years before that. I started going to Knoxville just because he got a car going and brought that car to Knoxville. That's really when we got to be friends, was when he was, of course, I wasn't racing. It's a different situation. I was at the racetrack had more time to be sociable that night. And we just really, really did like him.
Now, you mentioned you had a fire. What exactly happened?
I don't know what set it on fire. We was actually... at that time, we was running a little limited sprint class over at Oklahoma City just once a week, just playing. Something in the trailer, I'd been working on the brakes, trying to figure out the brakes weren't acting right and didn't figure anything out. And we was loaded up, ready to go to the races. And about 3 hours later, it caught fire and burned up. So I must have got a short end of brakes and got something hot, and it just took that long to get to something that'd really burn. But it was a good time. That's when I quit racing, and it was probably good timing.
Do you still get to races nowadays?
A few. I go to visit more than anything, and I still go to Knoxville. He and Jim got me started back there, and I still go there every year.
Hmm.
And I go to, I've been to two races here, and I go to the Chili Bowl. I get a kick out of the Chili Bowl. That's one of my favorites. Of course, it's handy. It's here at home. But I mostly go to visit and just try to go to one I think will be a good race. And that's about all I do. It's changed a lot over the years, you know. And back to what you were saying about your fans back there, the fans back there were really great. They reminded me of the fans here in Tulsa at that period. We had really good fans, and they were really enthusiastic. And I think that even makes the racing better. It makes it more fun, I know, for the racers when the fans are really enthused. And they were back there, you know. I still talk to people. I've got friends back there still that I keep in contact with from the racing days. And occasionally we still hear from some of the old fans. So, you know, that was another thing I didn't mention before that we really loved about Pennsylvania. The atmosphere, I think, would say what you'd say. So,
yeah, it's definitely one of those unique atmospheres that you won't find anywhere else, probably in the country. And on top of that, even Saturday night at Port Royal Speedway during the break, the track announcer was wanting to find out what the fans' thoughts and as to who was going to win. And Donnie Kreitz Jr. ended up winning his third Tuscarora 50. And they were cheering from him, booing for another guy, cheering for this guy, booing for another guy. It's still just the same way as it was back when you were here in 85. And, of course, you were in and around that time frame. A guy by the name of Doug Wolfgang was having a pretty good year for himself in that era. What do you recall about racing against Doug Wolfgang? And also, what did you like about racing at Seelands Grove Speedway on a regular basis?
Well, Seelands Grove was a pretty decent racetrack for me, and I liked the people treated me great up there. Not that they didn't treat me good everywhere else. We run Lincoln some on Saturday nights, and we run Port Royal on specials. Port Royal wasn't as good a racetrack for me, not because there's anything wrong with it. It just wasn't as good a racetrack. Seelands Grove kind of suited me, and I enjoyed it, and the people treated us great. And I wish that Wolfgang had quit racing up there, because he won the Jack Gunn race up there 2 years, I think 2 years in a row, and I run second both times. But as far as Wolfgang, he was a good guy. I knew him. I got to know him in 79 pretty well when I was running quite a bit of the outlaw races, and he's one heck of a racer.
Is there any one race from back here in Central Pennsylvania that always stands out for you, or is it just the fact, as you mentioned earlier, you went back home a better racer? What was it about Pennsylvania that will always be a memory for you?
Well, just the overall atmosphere and the way we got treated, the friends we made. And like I said, the benefit I got from it as far as racing was in how much better it made me. I come back here and we run really well. And I got one outlaw race and did some other things, won some pretty good races. In fact, I snuck back to Pennsylvania after I'd moved back here and won one of the Speed Week races out of Path Valley, which that made me, honestly, that probably made me feel as good as anything, because when I lived there, I kind of struggled. I got to admit, I struggled as a racer and with what and with some different things going on, a lot of things affect what you're doing. And I managed to win one race at Selins Grove and one at Williams Grove and one at Hagerstown. And those are all special. And they were, you know, they were really good. But when we come back in I think it was 92, I believe, and won at Path Valley, that probably was this, you know, that made me feel good that I could come back and I come back here with good equipment and a little different attitude and was able to beat them once. Well, that was nice.
When was the last, was that the last time you raced in Pennsylvania in 92?
Yes.
And yep. when was it that you finally retired from racing?
Well, that it was 8 years ago when I completely quit.
Mm-hmm.
But I had quit running at the end of 92, or actually beginning of 93, the owner I was driving for quit racing. And honestly, he left me hung out. He waited till about February to decide to quit.
Oh, geez.
So he, you know, he left me at a bad time. You're not finding rides in February. So it just left me hung out, and I just basically, that's pretty much when I did quit. I did a little more racing around here, but nothing full time. I did race, but it was not full time. I run some ASCS stuff. That's when ASCS was just starting with a friend of mine, Barry Grable. We had a car back here, and we run with them. And then when Tommy Wirth started racing, I started running all the NCRAs. And that's why I say in 92 he quit. So I run Barry's car and the ASCS stuff, and, you know, on a part-time basis. And then I run for another guy, Mike Schissel, some. Just kind of just nothing full-time. And I pretty much had quit by, I don't know, 98 or so. And what I did was very limited after that. And then I just finally quit in 05, I guess it was. And, things had changed. I wasn't having as much fun. It just wasn't the same. So it was time to quit.
Well, maybe we can talk Emmett into letting you take the two-seater out there, the Tulsa Chili Bowl, and let Emmett in the back seat and you drive.
I'll tell you what I'd like to do with Emmett. I'd like to take the two-seater and give him a lap around Belleville. I don't think he ever run Belleville.
That's right. That was Belleville. And then that's, folks, if you have on your bucket list, if you have never been to the Belleville High Banks, you absolutely owe it to yourself to get out there. Wonderful town, wonderful people, and the track is just absolutely awesome. And that, Jerry, was the site of your first win.
Yeah, my first sprint car win. I won a super modified race up there back in the early 70s, and I won my first sprint car race there in 74. So, yeah, I have a fondness for Belleville. It's a big old fast track, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm going to call Emmett and tell him we're going to get you guys hooked up, and we'll put you in the seat, put him in the passenger seat, let you take him around Belleville in the wing sprint car.
I'd like to give him a ride around Belleville. It'd probably scare both of us.
That is one very intimidating track. Before I forget, as we're talking with Jerry Stone, a longtime sprint car campaigner and racing here in Central Pennsylvania for quite some time. You were talking about conversations, and you get to the tracks, and you have a chance to do a lot of visiting with friends and former racers. When you had the opportunity, when you're at Knoxville and sitting down with Jimmy, did you guys ever talk about the racing back here in Pennsylvania, or was the conversation more about everything that was going on?
Well, no, we did. We talked about that. In fact, I really had an enjoyable day with him, and it was the week of the National Open, we was out there, and the year that he died, this was just not long before he died, and we went up and spent the afternoon at the house up there, and he got out all his old racing pictures, and we talked racing, and it was really enjoyable. He, you know, in fact, I learned a lot that I'd not never known about him because I didn't know him in those years when he started. Pardon me. But it was really fun looking at his pictures and talking racing and you know, what racing meant to him. And so it was a good day.
Well, it sounds like you guys had a lot of fun over the last several years of his life. And, of course, he always put on a great show and always had time for the fans. That was one thing I think will forever stick out about Jimmy was the time that he had for the fans afterwards. Too much today we see people packing up and the haulers are closed and the drivers are gone before the fans get into the pits afterwards. And I've always said the tracks are missing out on having a driver of the week outside of the track, and if it means paying the driver's way in for that night, you know, if it's $20 or $25 for the pit pass, look at what you will get back in return. And I can't understand why tracks just don't do those kind of things anymore, and we become a society where it's all about the back gate to help pay for the purse more so than let's get these kids to see what these race cars and meet the drivers and get to know them on a one-on-one basis.
You don't have the young kids don't hang around anyway, do they? That's what we enjoyed doing. We was almost always one of the last ones to leave because that was a fun part of the night. So, you know, I don't understand that. It's not. I don't think it is that way now, and I think that's because of the different atmosphere amongst the racers. You've got different. You got different kinds of people racing now. They were, you know, mostly just good old working people was doing most of the racing back when I started, and that's not the case now. They're mostly rich kids playing. Mm. And I think that changes a lot of things. Not that they don't do a good job of racing, but it's just they're in it for a different reason. They're different type people, and I'm not sure I like it.
You know, and I have to agree because I see so much of it, particularly in the IndyCar series, and there are a few drivers. And I won't name names, but there are a few drivers who understand the importance of having your face plastered on the BorgWarner Trophy compared to taking a multi-million-dollar payday in NASCAR if you can get one. There is a big difference, and you are correct. The younger kids don't stay around. But if we had stuff ahead of time and you have, such as at Sealands Grove, they got four divisions, you can easily have two drivers a week out there and rotate them around and have somebody in the waiting in the wings just in case a driver were to have a bad wreck or lost an engine and can't afford to replace it this week. You'd have somebody that could take over his place. And put. Is it that much extra to ask a driver to put a car out on display and talk to fans for 45 minutes? It saddens me because we as kids couldn't wait till we got to be old enough to go across the track into the pits at Flemington. Because of, you know, the New Jersey State Police, you know, they're in control of racing in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't wait to get in, and we don't see that these days. So, yes, you are correct. It's a lot of kids with a lot of rich kids. The mommy and daddy have the money, and they'll do whatever it takes to get a ride. And you guys were an era that was just phenomenal in which you had to earn your ride. And, you just didn't show up with a bag and pop right on in, like you were saying about Kramer before. I mean, Kramer had established himself as a sprint car driver, and it's a little bit of a different beast with a wing sprint car. And even back then in the early days of URC, no front wing and a smaller wing on top, and to go into a champ car, Silver Crown, that's a beast of a machine to haul around a racetrack. So, yeah, Jerry, unfortunately, it is different, but hopefully at some point somewhere down the road, these tracks will start realizing we got to put fans in the seat, and the only way we're going to do that is we have got to get these drivers out in front of these stands and let them do meet and greets every week and try to, you know, keep that younger generation wanting to come, because there's so much more to do these days than what we were doing in the 80s when I started covering this business. So, I hope it does turn around. I don't know if and when it will, but, you know, with having a show like this and being able to talk to great people like yourself and hearing what it was like and what it can be like, maybe some of these younger kids will want to stick around. Or some racetrack owner that's listening to the broadcast is going to say, hey, you know, maybe that's not a bad idea to have a driver come out and put their race car on display. Because even today, and I don't know what it was like back, well, I remember the back in the days when you guys were racing, the gates were opened early. Now they open maybe 90 minutes before the first hot lap session. And that doesn't give you a whole heck of a lot of time to unload, get things done, and it sure crimps the time of the media to go and talk and find out what's happening.
Yep, and I think you're right, and I see it more other areas than in yours.
Mm-hmm.
The promoters aren't promoters anymore a lot of places.
Nope.
They're operators, and like you said, they pay a purse that they can pay off the back gate, and, you know, they don't pay hardly any money, especially back here. The money's, at least your money is still decent out there, and that's what I liked about when I was there. But it's went away back here. They don't gamble any. They won't spend any money advertising because they might lose money that week. And
mm-hmm.
They're just not promoters like the old promoters that we used to have. And they count on whatever comes in the back gate's got to pay the bills and put some money in their pocket. And that's just my view on promoters is there aren't very many anymore. So.
And you are 100% spot on. They are track operators and not promoters anymore, and that's a sad thing. One final thing here, Jerry, as we greatly appreciate your time today to join us here on the Sprint Car Show, talk about race, but also Jim Nace. Any funny story you have about Jimmy in terms of let me ask you this. When you guys did have conversations over the last few years of his life, did you ever talk to him about that story you told us about him spinning around like a top at Hagerstown?
Yeah, I did. I told him, I said, that's one of the funniest crashes I've ever seen. But he didn't seem to see the humor in it as much as I did, because he was seeing it from a different view. I did tell him about it. He laughed.
Uh-huh.
But it probably wasn't as funny to him because he was the one that was spinning around. But it was actually comical. I mean, it wasn't a bad wreck. It didn't hurt him. I'm sure it hurt his car a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like it hurt him. It was just strange.
Yeah. And having been down at Hagerstown and the great folks down there having us to do broadcast back in the days when they had the spring races, and I wasn't there from when they had the water barrels, but I could just picture that car spinning around.
It was spinning fast.
Oh, I'm sure Crystal Nace will remember that one very well. So, well, Jerry, it has been indeed a great honor to have you on the broadcast today and to reflect not only on your good friend Jimmy Nace, but also a little bit about Kramer Williamson and racing here in Central Pennsylvania. I know a lot of people remember you, and we're so thankful that you've taken time out of your day to join us here and talk about Jimmy as we remember him this coming Saturday night at the Jim Nace Memorial 31st Annual National Open for the 410 Sprint Cars at the Sewens Grove Speedway.
Yeah, but I wish I could make that race. I really would, but it's just not gonna. I'm not gonna be able to. It would be nice to be there, but I'll make it back to another one. And I think about him quite a bit. He is a good guy.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for your time and for sharing some great stories with us today. And we look forward to talking to you again in the near future here on the Sprint Car Show.
Yep, Okay, I appreciate it, and I really do miss all the fans back there. I mean, it was quite an experience, and it wasn't financially, it wasn't a good experience, but overall, it was a neat experience. So, anyway, thank you very much.
Sure thing. Jerry Stone joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more right after this. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on Rod Ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality of rod ends on the market with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Shane Cottle. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show. Special thanks to our guest, Jerry Stone, for joining us today to talk about Jim Nace and the upcoming National Open at the Sealands Grove Speedway. Part of three big races going on the East Coast for sprint cars this weekend, not only the National Open, but the Sportsman 100 for the Super Sportsman at the Lincoln Speedway, and the 9th Annual Canadian Sprint Car Nationals. We'll have interviews and reports from all three of those major events on Tuesday, the 17th show. So join us then on Tuesday for a complete wrap-up of the latest happenings from this weekend. And we take a moment to pause and reflect that tomorrow, it was 12 years ago tomorrow, that a group of terrorists attacked our country and changed our lives forever. The great news is, 12 years later, we're still standing strong. God bless our first responders, God bless our troops, God bless America, and never forget that day.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.